All right, everyone, it's 10:30. May I have your attention? I hear a lot more talk down towards coffee than I do in the chairs in front of me. Okay. Thank you. All right, any housekeeping announcements, anything? No? Okay, good. All right, we will now hear from Clive Lansing, who is chair of the CMC Technical Materials. I'm not even sure the name of this committee, but it has to do with the technical materials aspects of UEB. Clive?
I'm coming.
You're up.
Okay,
it's behind me. There you go.
Making sure I know where things are. Good morning, everybody. I'm Clive Lansing, the ICEB, chair of the ICEB Technical Subcommittee. That's what we tend to call it. It's probably got an official name. The committee was formed to take responsibility for developing and updating the guidelines for technical material, often abbreviated to GTM. Now, I joined just over 2 years ago, and I have to say it has been something of a learning experience for me. I'm a blind and a braille consumer, not a producer. I gained a degree in electrical engineering as a young man after leaving high school, and that involved a lot of mathematics. And back then, I think we're talking about the mid-1970s, we used the Nemeth code. And as an adult, I've tended to use Nemeth for anything involving mathematics. And I recall being, more recently, being involved in the development of UEB. And I was really committed to the vision of UEB, that it must be extensible so it can handle complex materials without effectively switching to another code, and it must be precise and bidirectional so it can be accurately back translated back to print. And now my working career has been as a software developer, which is not strongly, it's technical, but it's not strongly mathematical. So when I got involved with this subcommittee, I really came with the with some experience as an end user, with some interest in that in technical subjects, including mathematics. But I'm not someone with, I guess, a keen academic interest in maths. Not like, you know, someone like Bill Jolly over there. And nor am I a braille producer. So when we think about the vision of UEB, maybe my perspective as an end user is just what's needed. The committee currently has as its voting members from Australia, Jody Doolin, from Canada, Michelle Hayes, from Ireland, Donald Fitzpatrick, from New Zealand, that's me, from South Africa, Francois Prinsloo, from the UK, David Spivey, from the US, Donald Winyecki. And we have special voting members in addition to that being Matthew Horsball, Phyllis Landon, and Joe Sullivan. Following the midterm executive meeting in June 2022, the committee has focused on developing consistency in the use of Grade 1 indicators with the intention of updating Section 1.7 of the guidelines. I have to say I didn't anticipate just how much work would be needed to resolve that issue. But essentially, we were finding a compromise between two quite different ideals. One is that UEB must be able to handle a wide variety of English language materials, which at any time may include mathematical symbols and expressions. The other ideal is that UEB should handle more complex technical materials, such as math textbooks, in a way that the meaning is and interpretation is efficiently, consistently, and accurately conveyed to the reader. Now, I guess it is inevitable that arguments will always come up about which is the better code for technical materials, UEB or Nemeth. Now, some people have been critical of UEB for, as they say, having different ways to write the same mathematical expression, when this is said to be not the case with Nemeth. Now, I think I understand the argument, but it seems to me that it is a bit unfair, an unfair criticism of what might actually be one of UEB's greatest strengths. Because UEB is a contracted Braille code that can seamlessly include uncontracted Braille when it needs to. And this is why UEB has grade one indicators for a symbol, or a word, or a passage. So when someone refers to an example like several ways to write X plus Y, it seemed to me that really the X plus Y itself is always the same, so it's always readable and recognisable. It's just that the symbols around it, like grade one indicators, can vary depending on the approach that was taken by the Braille producer. And this seems to have led to some inconsistencies of approach, and people were calling for clear guidelines on how to handle different kinds of expressions, supported by more examples, to perhaps make UEB more consistent. Now, I've set out our conclusion on this issue in my written report, so I'm not going to go into that detail here, but I do want to take this opportunity to thank UCAF for sharing their initial work on this and for updating their work in response to the subcommittee's discussions. I have asked Braille producers now to who are involved with our subcommittee to try applying our proposed new guidelines to situations that they come across so that we can see the practical implications of our current position before we take a formal vote on it. We're now discussing the rule which states that a space should be inserted between a function and a lowercase variable, even though this is not needed between a function and perhaps other expressions. And in my written report, I've listed the other issues that are on our list to be progressed. Now, just getting back to the UEB versus Nemeth argument, it's not one that I'm personally interested in. We should acknowledge that Nemeth is optimised for mathematics, so it will always be arguable that it is the preferred code, particularly for higher levels of mathematics, and I don't want to take anything away from people who might feel that way. But if someone is to use Nemeth, they are forced to learn new rules that conflict with UEB, and their brain must switch between the two codes as needed. Now, our vision is that UEB will handle mathematics and technical expressions which may just appear in everyday texts, while at the same time it must be extensible to efficiently handle a wide variety of complex technical materials without switching to another code, just building on the code that we already have. So that's the focus of the work that we're doing, and we need to stick to that vision without being dragged into the argument about which is best. I regret that under my leadership we haven't made as much progress as I intended in the last couple of years. During that time, I did become the chair of Blind Low Vision New Zealand, and for various reasons during that period, I've had to give that role a lot more time than perhaps I had intended in the beginning. But you did meet our new chief executive on Saturday, and she is quickly getting up to speed in the role. I'm already feeling the difference as she takes a lot of the work off my hands, which means that I've now got more time, including to be able to give more focus to this committee, if you want me to continue. So that brings my sort of personal address to an end. I'm happy to take questions and discussion. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to the mixer and ask if someone can grab one of the roving mics. I think there's number two is on a mic stand somewhere. And so I can answer any questions from there.
All right, so do we have any questions? Same rules apply. Please just say your last name.
Bowden, UK. Yeah, just give us 30 more seconds.
Apparently, we. Do you hear anything? No. Uh-oh. He left his dog over there all by himself, and dog was not happy about that.
So yes, okay. So I can hear myself now. And so somebody had a question. Who was that?
Bowden, UK.
Okay, James. Coming up, there you go.
Number five, thank you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're close to the main speakers here. I just wanted to comment that the argument of Nemeth versus UEB is completely fallacious. There are lots of other ways to express mathematical expressions, including ASCII math, including LaTeX, etc. Even MathML is another way to do it. Now, you wouldn't necessarily write in MathML, but you can write in LaTeX. You can write in ABC, in ASCII math, etc. And all of these different methods are sufficiently complete to do the mathematical calculations that you need. I mean, I never used Nemeth. I grew up on the British Maths Code. That's another one. It's, again, sufficiently complete to do what you need in mathematics.
Yes, thanks, James. We heard, I think it was yesterday, FM, was it, somebody was talking about the code switching that you need to do with Nemeth, and it's not surprising because, you know, the Nemeth that we used at school was, of course, absorbed into what was then English Literary Braille, whatever it was called. There wasn't any code switching. You just had to know that at times you were reading English words and at times you were reading Nemeth, and your brain just had to figure it out by the context. Now, in today's world, everybody accepts that we need formal code switching if we're going to have the ideal of a bidirectional code, at least. So you have to have something that tells you that you're in Nemeth or in English Braille. And so Nemeth, in a sense, has the same problem. And we were discussing this very briefly yesterday when when I can't remember who it was, said, well, you have to have a switch that says you're now switching back into grade two, because Nemeth, of course, is a grade one code. And so you've got kind of the same problem going on. It's just that in UEB, you have to switch out of grade two to say, I'm giving you some grade one now, but it's only a short thing, so I'll just do it for a symbol or a word, or it's actually a whole line, so I'm going to give it to you as a passage. And the guidelines that we've been working on will make it easier for Braille producers to know, when do I use just the word indicator or just a symbol indicator, or when do I use a passage indicator to handle this whole expression, so I can get my mathematics, write my mathematics down before I go back to English Braille again, which is still, this, in this case it's UEB, it's still the same code, it's just that you're going back into the normal grade two code. So I actually think it becomes a bit silly to even be arguing it, because at the end of the day, we have a vision behind what UEB must do. Nemeth was created and it's done a fantastic job at giving us a concise way of writing mathematical codes, but as I said, it forces you to have to change some rules, which when we developed UEB, we said we're not going to do that. And, you know, I recall the discussion that we had where there was a clear decision that UEB would have upper numbers. And once that decision was made, of course, the mixing of numbers and letters meant that you had to have symbols to say this is now a letter again, not a number. And all those rules have been developed. We know them. People can learn them as they learn UEB, and as they go into higher and higher levels of mathematics, our vision is that they will just continue to apply those rules and be able to handle more and more complex materials. So I think that's why I say we stick to what we do. This is what our vision was. We just need to resolve some of those issues around the just making sure things are more consistent by giving Braille producers more guidance on what to do in specific situations.
It's not just about Braille producers too. When we were kids, all we had to worry about was our brains. Now it's so much about reverse translation.
Yeah.
It's our machines that need to know.
That's right.
What code this is that we're in and so forth.
And that's why we need these switches.
Yes.
In the old days, I guess you could just wing it. You say, oh, I know that we've switched to Nemeth. I'm not interpreting it like English words anymore. But nothing told us that. We just had to figure that out. But if you're back translating that, you have to tell your machine,
yes,
this is now Nemeth, or this is uncontracted, or this means a square root rather than whatever. You know. So these are the things that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps we should just try and avoid the arguments about the subtleties of the different codes that we have.
All right. Thank you very much, Clive. That's Bill, I think we're going to need to move on now, unless this is really... Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thanks. Next on our agenda this morning, this is where we begin the agenda swapping. Our midnight speaker for the morning is still on his way, so he is being switched to the first thing this afternoon, and so we've moved forward or backward, depending on your point of view. We've moved Martine Abel-Williamson, who has graciously agreed to speak earlier than had been scheduled. Martine is the president of the World Blind Union, and we've asked her to talk about actually several topics, since so many of these things come under her purview. As many of you may know, the World Braille Council did have an existence prior to its affiliation with the World Blind Union, but in 2012 it became a committee of the World Blind Union. So that's why it's now in Martine's corner of the world. And we've also asked Martine to speak about the Accessible Books Consortium and all of everything. She's just in charge of it all. So Martine, you have. We will not be hearing from Christo de Klerk about the Africa Braille Forum. Christo tells me that it's now defunct and he has nothing to add. So, Martine, you have a whole half hour.
Wonderful. It's always scary if you get longer than you ask for because then you got to answer questions. Hang on, I'll just make sure this is at the right height. Can people hear me all right? Thank you so much for inviting me, and greetings from my global colleagues. And when I talked this morning about WBU and I use the word we, do remember that apart from some my Samoan colleagues that haven't affiliated with WBU yet, I actually mean all of you, because all of you are countries affiliated with WBU. So it's not some organization out there. You hold us to account as you are a fellow, as you are an appreciated member. First, I'll give a little bit of highlights about what the World Braille Council has been up to. So as Judy said, Kim Charlson at the moment is steering that work. She's got people from this organization, plus all of our six regions, plus some technical people on her group. In other words, you know, where we need to advise on help people with Arabic languages, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not just about regional presentation. It's about UEB. You need sometimes the technical knowledge around the table. Earlier this year, or actually a month ago, we met with the colleagues from the Louis Braille Museum, you know, the house in Coupe Fray. And we had to come to a very important decision because we are, in theory, a founding member of the group that manages that area. But because we do not own land in France, that council should really be handling its land in France. Although, so, and the upkeep of the museum cost about $100,000 a year, and we do not have that funding, so the government will contribute half of it, and the blindness organization in Coupe Fray, we will pass on our inaugural membership to them, because either we do it or they do it, and they've graciously offered, and it probably sits better that it's a local organization. Why I mention this is I do want to encourage people. I know we're all short of funds, but that museum is probably could do with support. And please, if you have an opportunity, visit it. It's totally amazing. I haven't been now for over 15 years, so it might have changed, but it is quite amazing to go where Louis Braille spent the first years of his life. Then, also at the months ago meeting, Kim Charlson brought to our attention, and this is half Braille, half tactile related, Procter & Gamble, which is a large household organized entity that sells things like shampoos and conditioners and moisturizers and things. They've developed a tactile system so that you can buy the feel of the tactile sign on the bottle or the container, know what it is. Now, there's three things about it. One is it's not in Braille, and we realize that more people can probably handle tactile identification than Braille, so we did ask them if they consulted. I'm not sure what the answer was, but they have now rolled it out, and it is available open source. They are saying to other companies around the world, feel free to make use of this. Now, we're not all in favor of having to learn this huge new tactile code. This is what a shampoo sign is. This is what a conditioner sign is. But if there can be minimization of all sorts of various tactile codes floating around the world, then we will say we'll support them as long as they develop the key in collaboration with blind people. Other items we're involved with is we are we are recommending, and we're working with other entities to do with tactile systems. And we are recommending that there is a standardization around the creation, manufacturing, usage, and placement of signage. That is, of course, a tactile and braille signage. We're all in favor of it, and many countries have got their own standards. And hopefully we can move towards where you can go and find it, no matter where it is, or if it's preferably at a similar point. The council will next meet, I was promised, in August or September, so you as members, please do hold them to account. Then we are also doing some work. We encourage people, when we look at over-the-counter items, such as dangerous household items or medication, we are encouraging people to maybe start off from the European Union framework. I think most of us who've traveled to Europe would have seen some great examples of Braille, especially on imported medication or not those that are just newly in bottles that they counted out for you, but packets. So we know that there are various mobile phone apps, so people might not be so reliant on Braille, but we do want to say, if you know, to promote people to try and use something that is that has already been worked on. Then in collaboration with the DAISY Consortium and with the APH, American Printing House for the Blind, and others, we are working towards developing a new international Braille file type, of course, that use file markups, includes tactile graphics, and link with enhanced navigation that for print people when they use get access to EPUB documentation. We keep on promoting what's happening on 4 January, Braille Day. We worked very hard towards the acknowledgement of that, and we know that it's only a day, but people can hang all sorts of events and calling for actions around a national day. So we encourage people to please make use of that. We work with ICEVI in the education area so that there are more Braille teaching resources, especially for kids with multiple disabilities. We realize that if you can't just stick someone up a Braille book in their hand or a computer, what they may be physical or deaf blindness or other matters that could need to be taken into consideration. One of our remits are also Braille teaching courses for adult students. And we've actually heard a lot around it already. I think most countries have got those. So maybe it's just a matter of maybe if a search is done that we say to self-learners, especially those who got blind later on, look at, instead of looking at each agency, maybe this is a site where you can find listings, whether it's a Hadley school, whether it's Blind Low Vision, whether it's RNIB, because hopefully there'll be more online options rather than just physical options. I'll stop talking there about the World Braille Council, but I'm sure there'll be time for questions. I just really wanted to keep it short as I've got a few items to talk about. The next item is the Accessible Books Consortium, which of course was established by WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, this June, exactly 10 years ago. And this month we celebrated its 10-year existence. Just to remind you, on the Accessible Books Consortium, it's a public-private entity, so it's not an entity in itself, it's a group of organisations, so it doesn't have a legal conformity. And on that, there's 15 of us that are members, one international donor, which is Australia, because from the day it would go, they've put in a lot of money into that, so they have a seat. And then the other 14 seats are divvied up into rights holders, for a change, we are not rights holders. The publishers and authors are rights holders. We are the vision impaired constituency. We are the beneficiaries, it's called. And the third other category is the authorised entities. Many of us call them blind as libraries. We're not supposed to do that, but sometimes we do. Not all of them are blind as libraries, so WIPO will remind us, don't fall into the trap. But when I go later through to tell you who are your authorised entities, you'll probably find it as mostly libraries. There are permanent members on the ABC. In other words, some are float around and rotate, some are permanent, and for your knowledge, World Blind Union seat and ICEVI seat are the permanent vision impaired beneficiaries. And then some of the other ones are, for instance, DAISY Consortium under authorised entity. Under publishers, you've got International Publishers Association, International Authors Federation. You've got under libraries, International Federation of Library Associations. And then you've got some that rotate because there's many interested organisations, but they get a term for 3 or so years and then it goes to someone else. So you can see that hopefully there's a great balance of various voices. Over this last 10 years, I'll just highlight a couple of our achievements. In 2014, when the ABC got created, there was 224,500 books that people could put onto the Global Book Service. The Global Book Service is the service that all of us can access if countries have implemented, not just ratified, implemented the Marrakesh Treaty. So in, and it's now, as of today, 960,000 titles up for sharing. And I think that might be a bit conservative because recently we've been told by some of our members that sometimes libraries do not always share it with the Global Book Service because they get busy or it takes time. So we need to ask all of you, even if you ask for a small title to be transcribed, like a magazine article or a music item, please ask your library to upload it, to send it to the Global Book Service so that others benefit. Otherwise, it defeats the whole purpose. We also, a great item that we have done is we've created a supplementary or beneficiary application. Because the moment a library may or an authorized entity can share books, they contact the Global Book Service, and the Global Book Service load the files onto their service. And that is then what the library gets. And you as a client will say to your local library, can I please request the following 10 titles? And they will send it to you or allow you to download it from your library. Remember, from your library. What the additional application does, or the beneficiary one, it allows individuals, you and me, from countries who have ratified, to go onto the Global Book Service independently with the code from our local library or authorized entity and search the Global Book Service ourselves. That is a huge point forward. Not all of us mind going through our libraries, but you can imagine the different options we have when we travel or when we, you don't have to wait for someone to be awake to talk to them. You can go on your own with your device to the Global Book Service and download that title. We have to encourage, though, more sharing of downloadable Braille files because I think Braille titles, it's not as if we physically share them around. We share the actual, the items around. So please, firstly, ask your authorised entity to sign the supplementary agreement that will allow individuals to search the Global Book Service themselves. Other aspects we're involved in, because some people have said to us, oh, we should put more pressure on the publishers. So we have developed an ABC online publishers resource, It's not hugely in depth, and we are currently working with other entities, such as in the library area and publishing area, to get more in-depth publishing manuals on board. There is a charter that publishers can sign that basically show their willingness. We also do, since COVID, a lot of online training with developing countries. We call it technical training. We train agencies to produce accessible books. In other words, we will work with, say, people in Zimbabwe or Malawi or Vietnam or Samoa or wherever to say, look, your local library staff, which often includes blind people, we're going to train them to produce books. Now, often there is now a problem that we teach them and then there's one computer in the whole library and that skills are lost. So this year, we've started a scheme where we contact manufacturers and agencies of devices, which is either refreshable braille or stuff like the Envoy Connect, cheaper Daisy players or even more expensive ones like Victor. We contact, and of course we've got already donated laptops that we want to pass on to these training, to these NGOs, because what does it help if you train them how to produce a book and then one person sits with an old computer? The snag we work with now is, though, that sometimes if they donate the computer, they have to take off, remove the operating system first. And although there are sponsors of things like Windows, it's just another hoop for us to jump through. But I'm sure we'll get there in the end. Copyright is a very testing, time-taking thing to work with. We've developed STEM courses together with the DAISY Consortium. I know some of you have talked already around accessible STEM courses. We're looking at science, technology, engineering and maths, and some people would say STEAM and put an arts in there. So the one good thing of COVID or of forcing us online is we now can train people online or in person. So the cost of people having to come in for training is really being changed, and those courses are available in English, Arabic, French, and Spanish, and we offer them at a discount. Every year we do the International Excellence Awards. There's two awards we give out every year, one for a publisher that's gone out of the way or progressed a lot, and one for a, I call it a technical project, usually a blindness or a technology agency that did something to enhance the access to titles. Now for the exciting part. Now this part came fresh off the press, hot off the press this morning. I think does paper still get warm if you print? I don't know. But if there was a printer here, this paper would be warm, but it's not a paper. But I received the information this morning because I've asked for the status of the countries here. So what I'm going to read to you shortly is, I'll say the country name, whether you're implementing the Marrakesh Treaty, who your libraries or authorized entities are, whether they are active, in other words, whether they share with the Global Book Service, and lastly, there'll be a yes or no, which just means whether they've signed up to the supplementary agreement to give individuals the chance to search the Global Book Service themselves. So country, have they implemented, name of service, name of library, how active are they, and have they signed a supplementary agreement? So this will give us all homework to do. Australia has implemented. Queensland Braille Writers Association, active? No. Visibility? Active? No. Remember, they still share with the book service to all other countries, but this and the individuals in Australia can't find them download directly. Vision Australia, active? No. Canada, implemented? Sorry, people, there's some Quebec organization, and I'm not going to bastardize the pronunciation. They are active? No. CELA, active? Yes. So if you're from Canada, Rolf Lucila, you can say to your library, give me my own code, I want to go look for titles. Oh, shit. That's not a Canadian dog, is it? Okay. I think Sila should sponsor a dog because of that. NELS, active? Yes. Now that we get to the yeses, the dogs are very excited. So in Canada, you as individual people can go and download to your heart's consent. Ireland, implemented. Library and Media Centre, active? Yes. New Zealand, let's test our people's knowledge. Blind, low vision, active, yes or no?
Unsure.
Oh, hopeless, yes. Yes, Blends, blind, low vision education, recently signed up. They do not share as yet. They've got they share for the Global Book Service, but at the moment they're not making yet, having signed a supplementary agreement. So Maria and someone, there's some work there. South Africa have not implemented, but South African Library for the Blind is an authorised entity. So the moment they do, and they've got many titles, the moment they do ratify, we'll be able to have access to those titles. The UK, Caliber Audio, they're active. No, not signed. They're supplementary. Seeing Ear Library, goodness me, no longer active, so don't worry about them, no. Torch Teachings for the Blind, active, trust, yes. Yep, so you can get all this stuff as individuals. USA. Oh, before I move on to the USA, a week ago we've been told that RNIB has applied to become an authorised entity, so we are very excited to work on that at the moment. So hopefully that means that they also will be have the supplementary agreement in mind. US have implemented American Printing House for the Blind, active. No. Braille Institute of America, active. No. CSL, oh, California Assistance for the Blind, active. No. Jewish Institute for the Blind, a pending agreement, so they've applied. No. NLS, active. Yes, signed the supplementary agreement, so if you link with NLS, you can do your own downloading. People, thank you very much. I know some of these things are a bit, if you're not used to the terms, so I hope I explained it enough. And thank you again for inviting me to address you, and we at WBU Level trust that ICEB will have a great rest of your deliberations. Thank you so much.
Any questions for Martine? Any questions for Martine?
Yes.
Australia?
Hello. Yeah, great presentation. My question is around where you were talking about the libraries. And when you say yes, the active, what do you mean in terms of, does that mean other countries can... where you say yes, does that mean, for instance, other countries can access NLS titles?
When I said active, that means that library is sharing with the Global Book Service. In other words, all of the libraries who've ratified can get it. So yes. Most of these are actually saying active. So most of us do have access to it. The yes or the no is there to say whether you as an individual person can go onto the site of the Global Book Service and find the title you want. So don't be too disheartened, Benazit, no, because you could still go if your agency has ratified and if your library is an authorized entity. You just go to your library and you ask for the title you want, and they contact the Global Book Service and get it for you and send it to you.
Okay, so you get it through the library rather than the individual way.
Yes.
Cool. Yep.
Golden
Ford
from Samoa.
Okay, that was someone from Samoa.
Hello there, Martin. Thank you very much for your wonderful presentation. First of all, just to let our members know, 4 weeks ago, Samoa had a training on the Marrakesh Treaty for the first time, and we have actually prepared a statement to our government to ratify the Marrakesh Treaty. Also, Samoa has now become an active member of the WBU since end of 2023. My question is regarding Braille signage. You mentioned that you are doing some work with Braille signage. Right now, we have government ministries asking us on how we are able to produce outdoor Braille signage. Unfortunately, we do not have any equipment. But if you can share with us some simple tips and guidelines on how we can produce Braille signage efficiently and effectively, or if you have any other suggestions that you can provide to us, Samoa would be very happy. Thank you. All the best in the work of WBU.
Thanks. And yes, I should have remembered that you've applied to sign up, so it's wonderful to hear that. And been clear, I believe we've done some great training with you guys. There are various authorized, like Bansat, for instance, and others that have done tactile standards. So I would say stay in touch with ICEP's two members who are members of the World Braille Council, as well as with countries like New Zealand, Canada, and Australia that have developed standards for tactile signage. Yes, at the moment it is still quite diverse, but some of the countries have agreed already. So please just stay in touch with these organizations as you do, because I realize it's not just about tips as where they should be placed, but about how they should be produced and what it should be made of as well.
Francis Gentle.
Francis Gentle from ICVI.
Yes. Thank you, Martine. I'm president of the global ICEVI, and we're also a permanent member on the Accessible Books Consortium. I just wanted to say that ABC will be hosting a conference comes workshop for all of the Pacific Island countries in October in Sydney, and I presume that the Samoan government and OPDs will be invited and will receive the required training in how to implement, so that you will receive formal notice through WIPO's ABC.
That's right. Australia has granted us very kindly funds to train the Pacific. Anybody else?
To answer Ari's question, Ari, you're coming to see Blends and Low Vision next Wednesday. I'll make sure we've got a copy of our signage guidelines ready for you in Braille.
Oh, great. Thanks. Thanks, Maria. Who else was there? Auburn Bork? Sorry, I heard someone's name right, but it sounds like Auburn.
Golden.
Oh, sorry, Golden, my accent, my hearing. Thank you.
Oh, it's probably my accent. I just wanted to ask, I'm Canadian, and I just wanted to know, since we can go on and search for books individually, you referenced a code. Is that something that we would get either from Nels or Sela, or do you go on and just sign up? And
oh, you get it from the library that signed the supplementary agreement.
Okay.
Like NLS or Sela or, yeah.
Okay, wonderful.
Because they will basically They will confirm to the Global Book people that you are really a blind person.
Right,
and
okay.
You're from a country that signed off on all the provisions. And just briefly, we know that it's more than just blind people that need the books. So it is for other print disabilities too. It's just quite hard to find global organizations that represent, for instance, people with having suffered stroke or so on. There's so many different other agencies around the world, and we can't stack the ABC too much with just hundreds and hundreds of beneficiary organizations, because then the balance will change. But do note that we are looking at that when we save vision impaired constituency, the treaty is really for some other impaired people as well. Paul, did I hear you?
It was me, Christo.
Oh, Christo.
Desperately trying.
Oh.
Thank you. Yes, we of the delinquent government. You know, we would like to know what sort of assistance we could enlist to get our government to do its responsibility. I got so many questions about this, but we can talk the details over a bottle of wine tonight.
Absolutely.
But I know that Blind SA would very much like to become an authorized entity, and we would like to know what the requirements are, how do you do it. You know, we are hoping that we'll get rid of this government tomorrow, but...
Well, Christo, at least, well, before we talk over a few wines, at least I can endeavour to send you the information about how an entity can become an authorised entity, even if the Marrakesh Treaty hasn't been signed yet, because then by the time it happens, it will be quite a bit more free, easy to smooth transition.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Who is that? Samoa. Is that Tino? Tino, just a second. Okay. I'm looking forward to seeing the Sila dog.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, everyone. My question relates to you mentioned the availability of a Braille training for adults. I'm just wondering if you could clarify that as to how can a country like us access to that kind of training, and what kind of things do we need to be aware of?
Sure. At the moment, countries in your neighbourhood, such as Australia and New Zealand, will probably have such documentation, maybe not for exchanges yet, or how online it is, I'm not sure how suitable, but stay in touch, because as I said, that we are working towards, well, firstly a catalogue of those, but also to see who can actually have a course that can be used all across the world. So we'll stay in touch with you about that, because I'll probably need to do my homework, as I'm not directly on the World Braille Council. So I want not to say something is already available or not.
Horse pool.
From the UK, is it?
From the UK, hello, on microphone one. I wanted to offer some insight. It's not really a question, but you might be interested in the feedback. In a previous life, I worked for Torch Trust for the Blind. Extremely happy that Torch are now signed up to the supplementary agreement. Part of the reason in my time why we weren't signed up to the supplementary agreement was because of this copyright, because the supplementary agreement is for people with print disabilities. Torch has a very extensive library catalogue, and some of the agreements predate any sort of copyright legislation for blind people. So we had books, you know, individual agreements with publishers that we could supply books for blind people, but those agreements did not extend to people with other print disabilities. And so part of the reason why we weren't signed up was because we needed to take some legal advice as to whether we were allowed to put those books that we previously had, you know, bespoke agreements with, were we actually allowed to put those on, and what would the backlash be from the publishers if we did? So I just wanted to share that insight, really, and it seems that Torch managed to navigate through it, so I'm really happy about that.
Thank you. And while you were talking, something else sprung to mind that I thought I'd better let you all know, is many people have said to us that with all smartphone apps, every country's got their own app, and some of them cost money and some of them don't, or you can only use them if you're a resident of that specific country. We are now working with Dolphin Easy Reader, and they've signed an MOU with us to develop their software for the whole Global Book Service. So when you go onto your phone, for instance, instead of just accessing your country's books, you'll be able to, at some stage, it's not ready yet, access with Dolphin Easy Reader via your phone the whole Global Book Service. Now, we need to work on how easy the search is and stuff, but it's so great that that someone has said to us, especially for developing countries, you just download this onto your smartphone and you have the library at your fingertips. But it's not available yet, so don't ask for it yet. Wait for some notification. Someone? Was there someone else?
Bowden, UK.
Bowden, UK?
Yeah. Could you please petition Dolphin to add BRF support?
Right. Okay, thanks for that.
I used to work for them, so I can say that.
Okay. People, anybody else? Doolin?
Six. There's from Australia here. It was just a clarification. We've actually named three authorised entities, you know, who haven't signed that supplementary agreement. It was useful, the extra information that Matthew provided, but it's still possible for those authorised entities to sign up, you were suggesting?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a new additional item. It doesn't mean that if you've signed up without it,
yeah,
that you can't change later.
Yeah, I thought so. I just thought,
yeah, cool,
make that clear. But as Matthew points out, there could be reasons that it hasn't already been signed.
Yes. Mm. Well, some of it is people are busy, these new staff, they just don't know about it. In other instances, it's a lot around maybe some publishers putting on pressure around, oh, if you put this in the hands of individuals, who knows where it's going to go. So, yeah, it's a lot of just awareness and advocacy around that. Any more? UK?
Sorry.
Matthew?
Is it? That's James.
James.
I just wondered, are you aware of the work ICEB has done about adult Braille learning courses?
Probably, but I suppose you guys feed into our Braille Council about that. That is why I'm saying to people talking about adult Braille courses that although World Braille Council has got priorities around that, that it's probably you guys who put it on their agenda. So you guys probably steer that work.
Thank you.
Right, and please, we have to ask him to pull it together so that we all can meet. Jordy from Australia?
Hello. I'm wondering, where can we go to read about the work of the World Braille Council and when the meetings happen and what's going on? Thanks.
Okay. I'll need to check that out, but I also know that we've recently signed off some minutes that included circulated information and reports. So stay in touch with, for Australia it's Helen Freres, but it's your WBUAP and WBU member country to ask them for those minutes. Preferably we should put more on the website. We're just busy with a bit of a redesign and rebranding to make sure that it's easier to find this information. But if you've got any suggestions or questions, feel free to let me know and I will pass it on to the relevant people.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just very interested also because it'd be great to get music on the agenda of the World Braille Council, given we do have an international code, and it would be great to get some more collaboration with not just the English-speaking world, but go beyond that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes, ICEB does, as I said at the beginning of this, have two members. So please get in touch with Kim and look at in influencing that agenda when you do meet in August. It's very important. If you sit with the knowledge on, say, Braille adult courses, then that is something that we should work through and not duplicate in some other way. Anything else?
Horsepool UK, just waiting. There we go, got the microphone. So I have just written to Kim to try and get the, to let her know that I'm still interested. Do you happen to know the date for the August meeting off the top of your head?
No.
No, okay. So we'll work with Kim and we'll get the date for that.
People, thank you so much. And we'd stay in touch during the rest of the conference.
Good evening. Oh. Thank you.
Awesome. Ooh. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you. We have six. Yes. Sorry.
This was a question for Madam President. I was just going to ask if we could return for all the comment. Sorry, for Bill Jolly's question for Clive and a comment on from Kathy Reeson.
Just yes.
If we could squeeze those in.
We can do that. Okay, I'll recognize Bill first.
Thank you, Judy. I was going to make a couple of comments, generally following Clive's report, and thanks for your report, Clive. And I'm sure that the group will make good progress under your leadership. I think that sometimes in the recent years we've got a little bit tied up with whether, in terms of mathematics, we're writing guidelines or rules. And the intention originally was to update the guidelines book, and then there was some discussion about whether that would then be incorporated into the rule book or stay as a separate publication. And I'm in favour of it staying as a separate publication with perhaps looser, more flexible language and lots of examples. I'm concerned that we're tending to think that there's really only one right way to write something in UEB. And I don't think that that was ever the intention. The intention was to take out ambiguity and to develop a code where it was, one was able to back translate from correct UEB back into print. And that would seem to me to be the overriding consideration. So that, for example, if we take something like sine x, allowing the IN sign to be used for the point of discussion, it shouldn't really matter whether we write sine space x or something like sine with a letter sine x to show the function is finished and the next term has started, because that would still allow for faithful back translation. So I caution against trying to develop one and only one way to write things correctly in UEB, but to focus on ensuring that back translation will be correct. The other point that I want to make is that we need to give students an education environment as our priority in code reform. And to this end, we need to be mindful that we're writing a code and we're writing guidelines not just for transcribers, but also for easy and correct writing by students. So we don't want students, for example, when writing maths expressions, to be looking ahead and thinking ahead a few characters or more to know exactly where to put grade one indicators and other special markers that we have in Braille that we don't have in print. We want it to be as natural for the student thinking about their expression, what they're writing, for the UEB that they will tend to write. We want that to be as correct as possible, not for the student to have to go back and suddenly realise that I do or I don't need a grade one indicator or a symbol or word or passage indicator at the start of the text. So I think that some flexibility and thinking in terms of guidelines rather than rules. The rules are in the rule book and are the basic framework, and then guidelines help to interpret that. I think that's an approach that we should be giving more consideration to.
Let me remind everyone that tomorrow afternoon from 3:30 to 5, we will have a chance to have an open discussion about UEB and UEB technical materials. It's going to be both, so there will be plenty of time to share these kinds of thoughts.
So I apologise for preempting discussion tomorrow afternoon.
Thank you. Jody, can Kathy's comment now, or can it wait till tomorrow afternoon?
Oh, it was just a thanks to Clive.
Clive.
Okay. Can you express to Clive my appreciation of his work? The grade one indicator topic is a huge one, and the time spent in background discussion is invaluable to creating the guidelines. Good. Writing guidelines is never straightforward. What seems a simple process becomes more involved the deeper you look. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. That's true of so much of what we do. Yes. It's excruciating, but it's what we do. This is something, this is a Banna comment that someone said years ago at a meeting, and it has stuck, so. Who was it? Jennifer. Yes, it's excruciating, but it's what we do. Okay, thank you. In our continued slight shift of our agenda, we will now hear from Jordy Howell, who is going to give us the Music Committee's report. Jordy, I'm just up here.
Just diverted to the UK for a brief moment. Didn't mean to do that.
Either way around.
There you go. All right, thank you. I usually work with a guide dog, so having to fold up a cane is not something I do all that often. So thanks for the opportunity. So just for a bit of introduction, I'm Jordy Howell. You know who I am, the chair of the Music Committee. I thought I would talk about who we have on our committee as country members. So I am the Australian rep, but last year I think it was, welcomed transcriber Christina Christensen from Vision Australia, which is great. She's doing a lot of work with the Make Braille software and trialling new things with scanning. So it's great to have her. Karkit Tam has been the Canadian representative for some years. Back in April, he informed me that, sadly, he's stepping down from that role, and I believe the new representative will be Nicole Roberts, but I need to talk to Jen about that. From Ireland, we have Stuart Lawler, who has been a long-term member, which is fantastic to have him. New Zealand's representative is Moya Michalakis, and she does a lot of their Braille music transcription, and I know personally how accurate her transcriptions are because of enjoying them at the music retreats that we have every 2 years in Auckland. In South Africa, we have a very experienced transcriber, Niels Mathiser, so it's been great to connect with him. Claire Galens has been the UK representative, and it's been wonderful to have her input, but now we have Melanie Wren, who is a transcriber at RNIB, and so she's recently joined our team, has provided some great feedback. We farewelled Karen Gerild from the US. It was great to have her, but since she's stepped down, and we now have welcomed Bill McCann onto our slate. So he is the founder of Dancing Dots and the Good Feel suite of products, which I'm sure a lot of you have used, so it's really fantastic to have his direct input into our work. So that's a member from each of our countries. I don't know whether Nepal is doing anything with Braille music, but I'd be really interested to find that out, actually. So our work is mainly around making sure that the English speaking countries of ICEB are kind of on the same page with regards to music, because Braille music is the one international code that spans languages. So in the last quadrennium, I think the world's really woken up in terms of Braille music development, particularly with mainstream softwares. So it's exciting to see that, you know, if you have an XML file, you can translate it and get basically a skeleton of a Braille music score, which you'll hear later on when we talk. James and I talk about the Daisy Music Braille project and what's been going on with the software packages there. But the music committee has been dabbling in those ourselves and discussing them. But from an English-speaking perspective, I feel it's important to ensure a couple of things. A, is that our guidelines for formatting in every member country are up to date. And that's something I think Australia, we probably need to revisit a few things. We have an addendum. I know the UK has an addendum, or has some guidelines for Braille music and UEB. And of course, the US has its fantastic document or book, the BANA 2015 Music Braille Manual, that a lot of our countries are using as a reference. We continue to communicate around the areas of music, Braille music not covered by the International Manual of Braille Music and the BANA Music Braille 2015. But it will be good to increase that work. The UK has developed a very comprehensive document, thanks to Roger Furman and other transcribers who have inputted into that work, which I'll come back to a little bit later. We developed a position statement, just ensuring that the three most well-referenced publications that are used in member countries in the production and teaching of music Braille are a sort of in one place, so that people know what they are, and they're obviously Music Braille 2015, the BANA document, the New International Manual of Braille Music, and Introduction to Braille Music Transcription by Mary Turner DeGarmo. So we hope that this is of some help for teachers and transcribers who are just looking for a one-stop shop for that. In 2020, the ICEB Music Committee submitted two resolutions to the 7th General Assembly, which sort of directed our work for the past quadrennium. So resolution 4 was preserving music Braille presently available only in hard copy. And I won't read the resolution because you will have all, you know, studied this report, I'm quite sure. So at the 2022 meeting, to do with that resolution, we had a really informative presentation, as Judy mentioned, on Sunday. Just had to remember back to that far. It seems like ages ago, doesn't it, Sunday? From Catherine Rader from the music section of the National Library and Information Service. National Library Service. I just went back a few years in an Australian organisation there, for blind and print disabled people. And so she described the processes, the pros and cons for digitising music from hard copy Braille to electronic Braille. That was a very interesting presentation for a lot of us, because really the US is the only country doing this. They have the resources and time to do it. And in our committee discussions, I asked our members and observers, because I should have also said at the outset, although we have members from each country, I really value observer input. We have a really skilled email list. You know, people on that email list have a lot of knowledge. We've got pianists, singers, teachers, educators, transcribers. It's great. So if you have a music question, it's a good list to pose it. So if you are interested in observing it, please get in touch with us from the contact page. So yeah, our committee discussions. I asked our committee what was their experience in using some of the tools available. So the Make Braille software for agencies, I guess, you know, run by the Daisy Music Braille Project, MuseScore 4, or now MuseScore Studio, I guess, the Salmai Braille Music Translator, which we'll hear about tomorrow, and the Goodfeel suite of products. So I've got a bit of a summary about what each country is doing. So New Zealand, or Moya, reported that she uses Goodfeel and also MuseScore and Salmai. So she kind of uses a conglomerate of all of those things. And in most cases, the automated part of it provides a skeleton. So she can paste that into Duxbury and add fingerings or whatever with 6 key entries. And she finds she uses music Sharp Eye for music OCR, and the MuseScore app on the iPhone to create an XML file. And she finds MuseScore the easiest for editing the XML, which is interesting because sometimes there's a bit of difference in how people are used to using the products. In Canada, Karkit said that they tested Make Braille and also Goodfeel in the past couple of years. And with the use of Capella Scan 8, and he explained that the results and accuracy are similar to other programs that he's used. So if they could produce a perfect music XML file, the translation is good with just minor formatting adjustments. But he said that they don't have the resources to sort of continue this work, a lot. They are sort of doing stuff manually as well, which seems to be a bit of a theme. In the transcription department at RNIB, Melanie said that they're largely still manually transcribing with the occasional use of translation software with the intention of increasing this over time. She said that they also use Capella Scan 9, so the latest version, and MuseScore and Goodfeel, so a bit of a combination there. In Ireland, Jackie Rooney, the music transcriber there, so she contributed saying that she uses the Dancing Dot suite of products. So Sharp Eye, which is the scanning engine there, and the Lime output files, which is the music version of that, the music editor, I should say, print music editor, to then be translated by Goodfeel. And she says that that's the easiest and most productive method of providing music Braille for her students. And there's also some things that she needs to add into the transcription. So again, that's a theme. So all that's in the report, chord symbols and piano music, etc. and in Australia, quite similarly, I can report that Vision Australia has been testing extensively the Make Braille software, but there are still areas of improvement, so we can't just throw a score at it and get a nice result, particularly in the areas of vocal music. It's quite challenging, so we tend to stick to manual translation for those, but maybe piano scores or orchestral scores, you can get a lot closer. There's a lot of potential. Personally, I can say that I use the Goodfeel Braille Music Translation software. I'll have an XML file from a conductor and being able to have a very quick output and edit it in the taxi on the way to a rehearsal or something on my Polaris. So that's a very regular occurrence. I'm sure a lot of the musicians agree with me there. In summary, all our member countries are trying to incorporate the translation software. I know that in South Africa, they use a system called note by note method, which I was having a chat with James about over lunch yesterday. It's quite interesting. And as to my knowledge, the software packages do not incorporate this method at the moment. Right, so the other resolution, resolution 8, was the new International Manual of Braille Music. And I won't read that one. Find star star. Here we are. So in 2020, I reported that I held initial discussions with the ICEB executive and the Braille Authority of North America regarding funding for this project. And I also received quotes from Vision Australia and RNIB for the production of such a document. So I then devised a timeline and work practice for the project. And we identified a number of people who would like to, who would like updates on further progress or to be involved directly. The Daisy Music Braille Project, under the direction of Dr. Sarah Morley Wilkins, initially had scope to take on the coordination of updating NIM and the working group, and she was very pleased that the UK had provided, you know, such a detailed and comprehensive list of signs and concepts not covered by the current manual. And I thank Roger Furman for collating that, because it served as a really concrete basis for our future work, and it still will. But unfortunately, the time commitment for that project proved too great for the Daisy Music Braille Project, and further information will be presented later on. We did investigate a supplement to the new international manual rather than, you know, starting from scratch, and that's probably the direction we'll all head. So if you're interested in being part of it, it's definitely not too late. It'd be great to hear from you. But just last week, I had an email from Sarah saying that she heard from the German equivalent of RNIB in Vision Australia, so that's DZB Lesen. So they're involved in, they would like to be involved in the Braille music activity, as would SBS, the Norwegian, Swiss Association for the Blind, and they're interested in hosting some kind of an international event to bring people together with a joint idea that they could organise, sort of kick-starting writing a supplement to this manual. So that would be super helpful. And my first task when I get off the plane tomorrow on Thursday night is to email, well, probably actually email her this week, to just find out more about that idea, because it's something we've been trying to do for a long time. We, aside from all that, we had a discussion on the ICEB music list about clef signs. So we talked about, were they necessary or were they not? And I think most feel that they are necessary in examination material for students, if the kids remember what those clef signs are, but not for general music learning, because of, you know, octave signs being the preference there. So in conclusion, although we've come a long way with Braille music transcription, there is still scope to collaborate internationally. The English speakers, for us, the English speakers, I'd like to see further communication regarding formatting, and you'll see this in the resolution that the ICEB committee, a music committee, has put to the General Assembly on Thursday. But we're getting there in the exchange of music material and publishers with the publishers network, and I was very excited to hear about ABC, because I know that this organisation also includes music files as well, BRF files. So just to conclude, if you'd like to have a look too at the ICEB Music Committee webpage, you can be found at ICEB.org/music.html. Every country, most countries I should say, not every country, has submitted information about books that you use, about teaching programs, about music technology. It would be great if each country could have a look at their section on that page to update it, because that's something we need to do. Because I'm conscious that that hasn't happened in the last couple of years. And there is a contact us link at the top of that page that I was looking through earlier. So please do that. That's the end of my report. Does anyone have any questions or comments? No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jordy. All right, we will break for lunch now and return at 1 p.m. for our Midnote speaker. Thank you.